From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the one and only gubernatorial debate includes charges of lying and even racism. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the debate, and there's praise for a major deal between chipmaker Global Foundries and IBM. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Four of the candidates for governor of New York faced off in an hour-long debate this week where they discussed a number of key issues, and the two major party candidates traded charges of lying and even racism. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, Republican Rob Astorino, Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins, and the Libertarian Party's Michael McDermott talked about hydrofracking, thruway tolls, legalizing marijuana, and being in Buffalo, the Bills football team. But the topic that drew some of the sharpest comments was on corruption and Governor Cuomo's Moreland Act Commission. The panel had been investigating the legislature, but Cuomo disbanded it as part of a budget deal. The U.S. attorney is investigating whether Cuomo's staff interfered with any of the probes. The governor, saying he was glad to clear up a lot of misinformation, says the Syracuse area DA that co-chaired the panel, William Fitzpatrick, made all the decisions on probes independently, and Cuomo denied he ended the panel early.
There was no abrupt stopping. I wanted the commission to get a law passed. That's why I impaneled it. I said to the legislature, when you pass the law, the commission will go away. They passed the law.
Astorino, who has criticized Cuomo over the handling of the commission, jumped right in, saying the Democrat is swimming in a cesspool of corruption.
So you're looking at Andrew Cuomo the rest of tonight. You will see a person who very well may be indicted after this election day comes and goes for witness tampering, obstruction of justice, failure to report crimes. We've seen this before in New York. It has to come to an end.
Cuomo, who has maintained a distance from his opponents up until now, also challenged Astorino, who is Westchester County Executive, directly, bringing up a federal lawsuit against Westchester charging housing discrimination.
As far as what Mr. Astorino said, I mean, this truly is outrageous. The U.S. attorney that he is now quoting said about Mr. Astorino that he's given numerous false and misleading lies. He's been ordered to give a videotaped statement for 7 hours under oath. With a penalty of perjury. When a U.S. attorney says you've done numerous false and misleading statements, that's federal speak for you're lying.
Astorino has said he's fighting the federal government because he wants to maintain local control in housing decisions in Westchester, a county where Cuomo also lives.
Shame on Governor Cuomo for playing the race card this entire campaign, including tonight.
Libertarian McDermott says he's heard too many charges and countercharges about corruption in numerous TV ads run by the Democrats and the Republicans.
And I'll tell you, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of listening to it. I don't want to hear about this stuff. If you want to have a Moreland Commission, somebody independent, who do you trust to have the answer? We've got to get people back into the process. New Yorkers have to be part of the process, and New Yorkers have to decide for themselves who's corrupt, who's not corrupt. I know one thing. I'm not corrupt.
The Green Party's Hawkins says he would restart the Moreland Commission and begin new corruption probes. On fracking, Libertarian McDermott opposes it until, he says, it can be proven safe. Green Party candidate Hawkins says if he were governor, fracking would not happen.
Well, my position is we should ban fracking because it's a danger to the climate. You burn gas and it heats up the planet because of the carbon and methane releases. And it does pollute the water and the land. We already know that from what we've seen in Pennsylvania and around the country.
Astorino, the Republican, says the state should have begun fracking years ago. And he says economically depressed regions of the state, like the Southern Tier, would already be benefiting. Governor Cuomo, when asked what will happen with fracking over the next 4 years, did not directly answer. But he did say that a more than two-year-old health review will be completed by the end of the year, but not before Election Day. And while all four expressed support for the Buffalo Bills football team, none were ready to offer to have the state pay for a new domed stadium, a question asked by a voter in a video. In Buffalo, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Four of the candidates for governor of New York faced off in an hour-long debate this week.
Although the two top candidates, current governor and Democrat Andrew Cuomo and Republican Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, really took the majority of the debate. And there were a lot of jabbing going on, and we even learned more about when the fracking report was going to come out.
Well, yes. Big news coming out was that Andrew Cuomo said that the fracking report would be out after the election, of course. And a lot of people deeply suspicious about that on the fracking, anti-fracking side, because they have believed that Cuomo wanted to get through the election and then might turn around and say, okay, we'll have limited fracking or we'll have experimental fracking or whatever else. But Cuomo, in the debate, says, you know, you're for drill, baby, drill. And that seemed to me to be an indication he was coming around to the anti-fracking side. He did say that he was not a scientist, that he would let the scientists decide. But I think that for him, in terms of his net loss among progressive voters, it is smarter for him to be with the anti-frackers than with the frackers. The other thing that was of note in the debate was that Astorino, a little bit over the top, said that Cuomo might very well be indicted by Preet Bharara for his role in the Moreland Act mess. And of course, Cuomo was somewhat defensive and said that the Moreland Act was always supposed to get results out of the legislature. Well, if you buy that, okay. But then there are those people who think that the bill that came out of the legislature, the agreement on corruption, was so weak that it's a sort of lame excuse.
Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins remarked during the debate that there's not enough time to talk about the issues. Should there be more debates in a gubernatorial election?
Well, of course there should. Look, Andrew Cuomo is way ahead. He's lost a couple of points, but he's going to win by 20 points. And you don't mess around with the potential for success by having more debates, which will leave you possibly that you'll step into something you don't want to step into. Look, there's no question there should be more debates. There's no question when you're a leader, you often want fewer debates, and then you try to set them up so that, you know, you get third and fourth and fifth party candidates if you can to make sure that the opponent, the major opponent's message doesn't get through.
I suppose, and this is something you've talked about your whole life, if there's nobody there to watch the debates, will anybody learn anything?
Well, that's right. Then the question is, how many people watched it? How many people will watch it? I think more people will read about it than actually watched it. I thought the Albany Times-Union did a terrific job in their step-by-step of the debate. The Times was good, too. So people will read something about it, but not as many as should. One of the things I find so appalling about New York State politics, always have, is how little anybody knows about any of it.
Interesting conversation this week. She was back in studio. That's Karen Scharf, the executive director of Citizens Action, but perhaps more importantly, the co-chair of the Working Families Party, which is where you started the interview.
The poor Working Families Party really has been snookered. You know, there was this big debate, everybody will remember, or nobody will remember, between Andrew Cuomo and Zephyr Teachout, both of whom wanted the Working Family Party a designation. The unions make up a good part of the Working Families Party, and they wanted Cuomo renominated because they didn't want trouble, I think. In any case, Cuomo beats Teachout, and only after he says that he will change his ways and be for a Democratic Senate. And then he gets out of the thing, but he's angry because now the Working Families people have made him become more of a liberal than he wanted to be. He wanted to be Bill Clintonian, in my opinion, and to be a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. So he comes out and he says, okay, and I'm for the Working Families Party. I'm for setting things up so that Democrats win the Senate. That's a big thing, but he's angry. So he gets out, and the first thing that they do is set up a Women's Equality Party, which is going to take votes away from the Working Families Party. They got snookered. They did what he needed to have done. They nominated him, but he was angry enough so that clearly he's going to deprive them of votes. And that may mean, because in New York State, ballot position, in other words, are you row A, B, C, or D, will go down instead of up for the Working Families Party. And frankly, David, I have to say, in my opinion, they deserve it. Because if they had nominated Teach Out, they would have been received lots of votes from dissatisfied progressive Democrats. But instead, like the old Liberal Party, they went the cowardly route.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A New York congresswoman met this week with officials from area hospitals to talk about preparedness for Ebola. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Congresswoman Nita Lowey, the ranking Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, met with about a dozen medical officials from several hospitals throughout Westchester and Rockland counties at Westchester Medical Center. Lowey says she left the meeting confident area hospitals are prepared to handle potential Ebola patients.
However, they emphasized again that all of this training, all of this preparedness costs money. And I intend to send the message to the CDC, the Department of Defense, the National Institutes of Health as a whole, to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that we have to work together. Public health is a bipartisan challenge.
Lowey has called for a House Appropriations Committee hearing on Ebola response.
We want to hear about the capacity, the willingness of the Republicans to provide the resources that are necessary to respond to Ebola. When you don't even bring a bill out of committee, when you cut money for the Center for Disease Control by $755 million, this is problematic.
She adds,
so I hope maybe the Republicans have learned a lesson and will take the committee that funds health and human services more seriously, respond to many of the conversations and recommendations from Sylvia Burwell, who is the secretary, and we can move ahead as quickly as we can, providing the resources.
The Washington Post recently published an article fact-checking claims that GOP budget cuts have harmed the nation's ability to handle the Ebola outbreak. The article concludes both parties are to blame, noting that this year the Obama administration proposed reducing the budget for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, but Congress boosted it. Lowey has supported a more than $1.1 billion response to the Ebola outbreak and prevention, including funding for the CDC, U.S. Agency for International Development, and Department of Defense. Here's Westchester Medical Center Executive Medical Director Dr. Renee Garrick.
The kind of resources that we all need are counted not in the thousands, but in the hundreds of thousands and indeed the millions of dollars.
Nyack Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Michael Rader explains his hospital's cost concerning the emergency department treatment of a potential Ebola patient.
We estimate the cost from anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000 for hospitals just for isolation of the ED until the initial diagnosis is made.
Again, Westchester Medical's Dr. Garrick.
In our case, we are building an entire wing of the institution to be able to care for these kinds of patients with special volunteer staff, each of whom need to be trained in how to take on and take off the equipment. And you can imagine the cost of all of that with the training, the equipment, the preparation, the isolation, and the high-end technology that's required for the care of these patients.
That wing is a reconfiguration of an existing wing. She says it is 95% complete and preparations so far have cost about $750,000. Dr. Garrick expects the wing to be completely ready in a few weeks. Meanwhile, Lowey is not calling for a travel ban on flights into the U.S. from West African countries to prevent the spread of Ebola, but says she is keeping watch. However, Republican Westchester County executive and gubernatorial candidate Rob Astorino and Long Island Republican Congressman Pete King this afternoon reiterated their call to suspend flights from West African countries.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Some in Saratoga County are praising the recent deal between computer chip manufacturer Global Foundries and IBM this week, saying that it could bring more economic opportunity to the region. The Legislative Gazette's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard with more.
IBM announced earlier this week that its chip manufacturing business would be acquired by Global Foundries, which operates a chip fabrication plant in Malta in Saratoga County. As part of the deal, Global Foundries will take over operations at IBM's plants in Essex Junction, Vermont, and East Fishkill in Westchester County. IBM is paying Global Foundries $1.5 billion as part of the deal. Todd Shimkus, president and CEO of the Saratoga County Chamber of Commerce, said the deal proves the commitment for a company that has already had an enormous economic impact on the region.
This deal with IBM, I think, really solidifies them as one of only three or four remaining companies in the world that are making semiconductors in what is a booming business.
Shimkus said Global Foundries to date has invested $12 billion in the area and has a payroll of $338 million. Shimkus said 65% of workers live within the county. Global Foundries is the sole tenant of the Luther Forest Technology Campus operated by the Saratoga County Economic Development Corporation. Shimkus said the deal could help attract more business to the region.
I do think, supply folks that were working with IBM and or Global Foundries, you now have three potential areas where you might have to provide your services or product, and we're the most centrally located place from which to do that. So I do think there's huge advantages to being able to attract additional companies and investment.
Global Foundries' expansion and construction efforts have been heavily incentivized by New York State tax breaks. 113th District Assemblyman Jim Tedisco said he's proud the company continues to grow in the Northeast.
We're proud of it. We're happy we were a part of it and supported it and helped initiate it. But we want to make sure that we're all working together as a team, and I think that's why this is growing and it's accomplishing what it's accomplishing.
In Malta, Global Foundries is currently working to construct a $2 billion research and development center. Kathy Hill, a professor of business administration at Skidmore College, said the deal between the two companies could have an effect on the new facility and also attract others.
Well, they're taking over all the IBM contracts that are part of that business, which means that for Global Foundries, it expands their customer base. And as it expands their customer base, they're going to have employees, I would assume, at the R&D center here, given the proximity of the other factories, to work on ways to advance those businesses through technological or business process innovation.
Hill said the fact that Global Foundries is expanding in the Northeast and not elsewhere shows the commitment of state government and the Cuomo administration, as well as the ability of the nanotech college, now called SUNY Polytechnic, to, quote, create a platform that creates jobs for the region, unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Key personnel with Occupy Albany recently gathered to reflect on the past, present, and future of the movement. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
On Saturday, Occupy Albany was on the move, marching from the city's downtown Central Avenue McDonald's to the state capitol to support Food and Jobs with Dignity, an anti-factory farming initiative that's been around a few years. The group is best known for its trademark Occupy Albany event, weeks of squatting in a city park in solidarity with the 2011 effort that began in New York City as part of the response to the U.S. financial crisis when occupiers converged on Zuccotti Park. The action fostered a return to activism not seen in the U.S. since the late 1960s. The Albany effort included young and old, people from all walks of life. Ultimately, with the coldest months approaching, the protesters were removed by police from their Albany perch. 3 years ago today, UAlbany activist Sharman Hussein told WAMC why Occupy had a special meaning for all college students.
The education system is deteriorating because it's getting privatized, our tuition is getting hiked, as well as all our resources are being cut. We're asked to pay more for less resources, and as students, it is our role to stand up and speak up.
Sunday afternoon, hardcore local occupiers gathered at the Social Justice Center on Lower Central Avenue. During a meeting themed Occupy the Future, the agenda included the role of Occupy, projects to consider, and solidarity to build out. Longtime Albany occupier Daniel Platt says that while the local organization hasn't made front page headlines lately, they're actively plotting a future draft agenda and monitoring fellow activists.
From cyberspace to meet space, you know, real space, more people are doing things. Or at least when you're looking for what's going on, you'll find it.
Platt emphasizes one must look beyond the mainstream media's constant tirade of ISIS and Ebola stories.
In California, there's Block the Boats. People are stopping certain shipments coming in from Israel, so it's a way of anti-apartheid work. There's school walkouts in different regions because of education struggles, whether it be Common Core or in Colorado, where a school board wanted to change education standards towards a more nationalistic bent. There's Ferguson that's flared up right now. More people getting killed by the police. There's the Rolling Rebellion for Real Democracy.
And there's also Occupy the FCC, which is all about net neutrality. And Platt adds there are several ongoing occupations, including the pro-democracy protest Occupy Central, the civil disobedience movement half a world away that at one point saw tens of thousands turn out to rally against the Chinese government's ruling on who can be a candidate in the 2017 elections for Hong Kong's leader.
More mass movements are coming to a head.
People in major cities like Beijing and Shanghai are clandestinely following Occupy Central, nicknamed the Umbrella Revolution, after protesters used the devices to shield themselves from pepper spray. Local activist Sister Honora Kinney, a board member of the Homeless Action Committee, goes right to the movement's roots, shining light on long-standing concerns of occupiers, including raising the minimum wage and restoring food stamp benefits to needy New Yorkers.
You need to build that climate where you improve everybody's situation by improving everybody's situation and not just saying, you know, let the bottom end starve. And I think that, in one sense, for me, was the fundamental insight of Occupy, that 99% or whatever percentage you want, 85% or whatever of the people are being taken advantage of by the 1%, and this is something that has to be fought against.
Occupiers agree the worldwide movement has succeeded in raising public awareness about social inequalities and injustices. They say the mission of Occupy the Future is clear: identify what the nation's principles are, whether we as a people are living up to them, and what can be done to ensure those principles are both preserved and carried out by government leaders.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1443. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government, politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.